Hello, and welcome to Peter's Podcast, where we talk about real yoga, actual happiness, and deep living. Thanks for joining me. I'm here with Wendy Newton, Yogi Raj, polarity therapist, and wife extraordinaire.
Hi, Peter.
How's it going?
Good.
Yeah. We're here in Crown Heights, high up on Mount Prospect. Anyway.
Not high enough.
Not high enough to get away from the noise on the street. But we're dealing with that.
It's we have part an of orange what is. Wall, and we love the orange wall.
We do. We painted our place very nicely. All of you will have to come visit. So today we're kind of tackling a subject, and I hope it's going to be fun. It's something that we deal with a lot in our own private lives and also in working with our students, which is maybe negotiating or navigating this, what is this bringing yoga back into living thing? Mm-hmm. And it has to do with you do your practice, you do samadhi, which Wendy's upcoming book with Alan Finger is all about, the Yoga Sutras, and then you have life going on, which includes that going beyond. Then you have emotions that come up around pretty much everything we do. It's part of our patterning and part of our defense mechanisms and part of everything that makes us human. And then there's this intermediary, or we weren't even sure what to call it, but there's this something or other that gets to grow and learn and evolve and deal with that emotional stuff based on what we gain in our meditation practice and also what we just learn, what we understand. So it's partly in the realm of psychology, partly in the realm of the Yoga Sutras, partly probably just life itself.
Don't forget Kriya.
Kriya.
Meditation.
Yeah.
Partly in there.
Yeah. So
it's a really rich topic.
So maybe we'll just get started on it.
We're going to jump in because just now before we did the podcast, Peter set up the table, and we knew where we were going to land there and start. But I was involved in writing emails, and big administrative moment happening in my computer land, my brain, and dishes and all sorts of other things around the house. And at some point, it got very quiet in the other room, and I just peeked my head over there to see what Peter was doing. And of course, he was meditating. And I thought, oh, he's gone to look for a subject. He's gone to clarify something. He's gone to open up the channel for whatever needs to come in to come in. And lo and behold, that is exactly what he was doing. And it really struck me when I was listening to him sort of give the topic that was such a significant part of the process that we kind of overlook. Or we can if we're not established in the practice. But it's a very big topic, and I'm gonna.
It can seem kind of mysterious.
Yeah.
Like, what do you do with this yoga? Like, I feel okay at the end of class, but then my life comes back.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, I think that there's this kind of synergy that happens between like just to kind of boil it down, like those three areas that you mentioned, there's like this sort of, you know, that emotional level, the emotions are functioning on this level that's sort of below the surface, I would say. You know, when you're in your emotions, you don't necessarily have perspective on your emotions.
Yeah.
That's the nature of it. And then
this may be most clear part of your conscious thinking. That the emotions are below that.
Yeah, like just below the surface of your conscious thinking, period. It doesn't have to be clear or any other way, but you know, there's this part of the mind that just like kind of thinks it knows what's going on.
Right.
You know, like we think there's this navigational tool that we think that's me, the ego, you know, the sort of manas, ego part, you know?
Yeah. Manas, I'm going to define that for anybody who doesn't know. So in yoga speak, we usually think of the mind as having this thing that interacts with the senses and gets data in that way. And it also has memories from previous things that had to do with that. And it also has a sense of I am, and whatever's going on have to do with me.
Right.
And then there's this other component, this intellect component, that does this sort of figuring out what to do with all of that.
Yeah.
So that's all manas, the mind. Okay. Carry on, if you remember.
Yeah, what? but, you know, I think when I was listening to you talk, I really got this very strong hit that, you know, there's this below the surface part that's, you know, the emotional body is kind of like, you know, it's not set up to kind of have perspective on itself. It's just kind of mediating between our reactiveness and our who am I, our identity mind. And then on the other side of it, we have this part of the mind, or this sort of, I would say, even beyond the mind, you know, what we think of as the mind, mm-hmm. which is what we access in meditation, which, you know, we call it Adishta Jiva Atman, right? Mm-hmm. Atman, the part that is the witness consciousness, or the, you could say, the soul, however you are set up to hear that. And then there's this part that
mediates. But access to other information beyond what's just coming through the senses and this memory of that.
Exactly, and the individual.
The smaller sense of I.
The smaller sense of I, mm-hmm. yeah. And then there's this part that you know, you said, well, what's that part in the middle that you know, deals with the emotions and also kind of surrenders itself to opening to that beyond the mind inspiration, and you kind of named it Bodhi, and I would definitely agree. Mm-hmm. You know, that the Bodhi is kind of the mediator, but you know, I don't feel the need to sort of put too fine a point on that. You know, Bodhi and Jiva and how they interact.
Yeah.
For myself, you know, just what's the, you know, I think it's more important to just note it, like kind of know how it works in life.
Exactly. I think that's a more interesting, fruitful place to talk. So I was providing a kind of an example before we got on the mic, that maybe I can just say again, that we'll often have some kind of an emotional reaction to something. You know, like you say something to me, I have some kind of an emotional reaction to it.
And oh, you mean like the last time we tried to do a podcast?
Yeah. And I don't have to have any processing around that at all. I can just dwell in the emotion of it. You know, I can be mad, or I can be hurt, or I can be whatever the emotion is that came up. And those things that come up are part of our makeup. You know, they're part of the patterning that we were born with, or part of the patterning that is what happened to us as kids, and it became our sort of go-to way of interpreting everything that happens. Like, you know, I'm not good enough, or I never get what I want, or whatever it is. You know, I get shut down, or, you know, the only way I can get heard is by getting really mad and yelling, and or whatever it is. So we have these reactions, and we can just sit in them, and then you know,
or this, not
right. But if we do, I think that's where a lot of psychology kinds of thoughts will say, and you know, the psychology of yoga would say, well, if you're just gonna keep having that and never bring any light on it, it's just gonna keep happening. you're just going to see that experience over and over again because there's something to learn there. There's something that can get exposed there and help you, and I'm going to throw this word out into the discussion, evolve. Mm-hmm. It's going to help you become more able to deal with the challenges that you're facing in living. And in the model of life as a school, there's something to be learned from that.
Mm. I absolutely agree with you, and I like the language that you're moving towards there. I think it really gets to the heart of the fact that we are, I don't know exactly how to say this, but like we're animals that like repetition and pattern. Mm-hmm. At the heart of it, you know, mm-hmm. like that our consciousness, whatever that is, it you know, it's kind of like a medium that gets these grooves molded into it. And how could it be otherwise? Because it would just be chaos otherwise, right? So we have,
that's, you know, the space element.
Right. And all of the examples, you know, like the extreme vulnerability or just those examples that you brought just now are what I would say are negative pole examples, but it's just as patterned to always be like, you know, this is fine,
yeah.
You know, or like you know, it's a little bit culturally determined, right? And we can get just as stuck in positive pole patterns, which might look like spiritual bypass or just, you know what I mean? Like there are things that it's not always about the negative stuff, but whatever it is, I agree that there's a way, and this is, to me, the path of practice, to be able to sit in it, as you say, in such a way, not that we like re-trigger and re-trigger,
right,
or push ourselves into stuff that's just kind of making the pattern happen more, but in a way that allows us to kind of go in with toe in the water and to sort of have some safe space to experience the thing.
Yeah.
Let it move, because that's why it's, you know, we get stuck in these loops.
Yeah.
And they continue because we either are re-triggering them all the time or we're not looking at them.
Right. So you're now talking about, so if you're not going to just sit in the emotion, then what's the alternative? So you just mentioned creating a safe space to have the experience of it.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that's sitting in it to a certain degree. Like, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, we're like...
Allowing it and not just immediately saying that's bad or that's wrong or
that's good and I should.
That, or it's good and I should be able to... I'm right? justified in this.
Yeah, because those are just two sides of the same coin. And mm-hmm. I think some people have more trouble with one side than the other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like some people... Whatever, that's a you could have a whole podcast just on that. But yeah.
It's like self-righteousness versus victim.
Yeah, yeah. And for me to remember that there's always two sides of it is really potent, because then I have to examine what's going on before I dismiss something or get stuck in it.
Right, so can we talk for a minute on that? I have to examine, you just said. Did I quote you right?
I don't remember.
Yeah, so I have to examine that. So I think that's the place that we don't talk about too much in yoga studies, mm. right? We talk about meditating, and we talk about living, like being physically doing something, like being on the mat or whatever, but we don't talk about that examining part too much. It's called svadhyaya.
Mm-hmm. I talk about it all the time,
yeah.
So I'm a little bit weird.
Oh, okay. So maybe let's talk about that in the general
yoga community.
Yeah.
I think we say svadhyaya,
right.
But we don't really know what it actually
exactly.
is.
That's what I'm saying. We don't really go into what does that look like exactly. What is this like examining thing, and what does it look like?
Yeah. You know, I could bring an example of a little piece of my own process that was actually really difficult, and I think could serve as an example of something that, like on a fairly large scale that required a lot of yogic, what I would call perseverance. I spent a good chunk of last winter sort of exploring some stuff in my family history that was really, really emotional for me. And in the process of doing that, I kind of got a little bit overwhelmed by my emotions. Mm-hmm. And I had to give myself time to process it. Like, I couldn't say, okay, this is going to be like 2 days or a week or even a month. I just had no idea. And I felt really called to be able to give myself the time that I did need to do that. And I wasn't completely dysfunctional. I wasn't in a total big, mm-hmm. you know, huge depression. Mm-hmm. But I would say I was worried about myself a little bit because I was more in the emotional body than I really had ever been as a grown-up adult yogi, mm-hmm. you know, even with all the stuff that's happened to me. And, you know, it was just a really an eye-opener to sit with it and to say, you know, this is because there's a backlog, right? That's what that looks like for people to, you know, have this kind of underlying their whole perception of reality.
Right.
And me too, right?
Right.
You know?
So when you're saying backlog, you're meaning that it's this way of being in response to things has been going on for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, it was very ingrained. A lot of the stuff was just never open. I never opened up that box. It felt like a very big Pandora's box. I just was living with a lot of adaptation to that. I mean, this is history, you know, mm-hmm. that's stuff that ways that I was raised and stuff that had happened to me. And in any event, the feeling of it over the course of this 2 or 3 months of a whole winter was there was some fear, really, you know, and it took its toll. I felt tired and sad and depressed. And I wondered, like, oh, is this, you know what I mean? Like, I had thoughts about it. But at the end of the day, you know, doing my practice around that and just staying consistent and a little bit persistent with, like, remembering to do my meditation and to do my practice and to do my work and to, you know, just be available to my own self. You know, there was a beginning, a middle, and an end. You know, it was not about staying stuck in those feelings. It was about feeling them.
Yeah.
And I think we're so scared mm-hmm. of those feelings. Mm-hmm. And we definitely go to medication. We are told that we're not supposed to be, you know, depressed. We're not
right.
supposed to be.
We're supposed to read Rumi.
We're supposed to read Rumi.
Ecstatic.
Or just, you know, there's so much platitude happening.
Yeah.
And it seems inefficient to me, you know. Mm-hmm. If we could just let ourselves kind of have the experience and understand that it will pass, then we stand a chance of working through those three layers, you know.
If I can just mm-hmm. parse that a little. So it'll pass kind of for two reasons. One, time sort of heals all wounds, so things just naturally pass, like emotion comes in waves and then it sort of recedes. But also it passes because of some work that we do with it.
I have a couple of ways to answer that. One is that for me, the way emotions work is that it has to everything to do with how we get patterned mm-hmm. and how we adapt to situations. So if we had a certain circumstance in our life as a young person, especially in different developmental ages, we develop a way of dealing with that. And sometimes it's like precognitive, sometimes it's, you know, it just depends on what it was and when it was. And then that worked. So now we bring it to everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Now that's our way. And we don't even know it most of the time.
Right.
We don't even know what that is.
Right.
So, you know, sometimes that's about not feeling the emotions.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sometimes, and you can see right away if somebody's just the type of person who's not letting themselves feel it, right?
Yeah.
You say, how do you feel? They say something happened that's bad, and you say, how do you feel? And they say, well, I was thinking about, right? You know, it's mm-hmm. like they don't go to the watery place.
To the feeling, yeah.
And then other people just, you know, you say, like, boo, and they start weeping, and they're always in this emotional place and just can't stop. So there are these you know, emotion just kind of has that way.
Yeah.
But, so in my case, it was the former, right? Like I just was, there was a whole category of emotions that were not safe to feel when I was a kid, period. Mm-hmm. And I just somehow decided in this moment of time that, like, in order to evolve, to use your word, that it was a good time for me to just, like, go there. Mm-hmm. And explore some family history and let myself have the emotions. And I'm not done with it.
Right.
But I'm not in the thick of it.
Right.
But the other side of it is that, you know, if you're really using your yoga tools, right, then that part about the shift happens for me in that area of the booty. Mm-hmm. Right, because if you can go to the place where, you know, you're
being aware, being conscious,
right? Mm-hmm. Like that there's something when you can get that perspective,
right? Because you're not going to change the emotions necessarily.
No, and it's not about that,
right?
It's just about not identifying with it from this old perspective,
right? Exactly.
And that's what
and
makes
that's the
shift.
Evolving.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And that's the evolving.
So that you can have emotion and you can say, I recognize this. Remember what this is about.
Yeah, let it unfold.
Right. So for instance, if it's that, you know, everyone always didn't care what you were talking about. They shushed you, right? Mm-hmm. So then you have something come up where it feels like that's happening. Something's triggered that feeling. Right, but it only took a tiny bit of someone like turning away from you for a minute or bringing up another point, but it was enough to trigger that old feeling of I never get heard, I never get to say my part. And the emotion doesn't have like a modulator on it. It's just on or it's not on. And so when it gets triggered, that's why it seems like people explode over nothing. Because it isn't nothing in their emotional realm. It was the trigger, and so now it's come up.
And now it's come up with no filters.
Yeah.
Right? On the emotional level.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, like, we just aren't, you know, the adult filter self is just not the part that's in control.
Right.
Also, I think it can have... For me anyway, just like from my own self, like working with my own self through my yoga and working with other people through yoga, I think that everything has its time and sometimes things take longer than we think. Like, you know, you can't just imagine that you could go to like a 2-hour workshop and be like, okay, good, I got the idea and now we're done.
Right.
I mean, sometimes it can be quite, you know, just... finding a new way to work with something or meeting a new teacher or something like that will just open something up right away. Sometimes that happens.
Yeah.
But more often, I think it's like kind of when the student is ready, the teaching appears.
Yeah, yeah. You know? Well, this lovely author, Wayne Dyer, had an example that we watched on a TV program of his once where he was talking about, he provided this little image of, you know, you're walking down the street and there's a hole in the sidewalk and you fall in the hole, you know. And then the next time you're walking around that block, you're walking along and you remember there's a hole, but you don't notice when you're getting to it and you fall in the hole. And then the next time around, you're walking and you see the hole, but you still fall in it, you know. And it takes so many times of going around these things before... it's like you're not in the pattern anymore. Yeah. And in between, you're sort of in the pattern. Like you're getting more and more aware of the pattern, which I think is a really fruitful time in your evolution, because that's the time when you're negotiating the power of your ability to cope with these innate things in you.
Yeah. Right? And that's usually when we do... practice, things that will shift. But I also think there's a moment when people get a little bit enamored of practice, mm-hmm. and then they're like, I'm cool now.
Yeah.
Right? And I don't have to, you know, I don't have to have that anymore, but they're still falling in the hole, and they're like not aware of it.
Right. Well, there's the tapas, the requirement to stick with it, and there's the Svadhyaya, and those two, you can't do one without the other and have it be effective.
And also then there's the dreaded Ishvara Pranidhana, which means like your work for now is done and you got to just let it develop as it will.
Yeah.
But I was going to say, did you ever see the movie Groundhog Day with Bill Murray?
Yes, many
That's
times.
That's in there, yeah.
Over and over again.
Over and over again.
I saw that movie.
But, you know, it is sort of like that. And these challenges, they seem to come up under different guises.
Yeah.
You know, they seem to, you know, people experience this with, you know, relationships a lot, love
right.
interests. You know, it's like basically, or, you know, you could say same shit, different day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like it kind of proves the point that what's in us is what we see out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's so interesting. But I mean, I think that the emotional layer of life is so important. And I think...
Well, it's part of life. I mean,
it is part of life. And for me, if I were going to sort of affirm something,
mm-hmm.
and you hear me do this all the time, but not in the best way. Like, I have the right to feel what I'm feeling,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, I... You know, that's part of my patterning,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's sort of what I was working with last winter in a bigger way. But, you know, it was not safe for me to feel what I was feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Like I was really quite disconnected. And so I have had to, as an adult, make that part a big part of my training and my application of yoga. And I have seen with a lot of practitioners and people learning to do this work, you know, the deeper work of yoga, that it's, you know, we teach what we need to learn. So, you know, you get really good at teaching for others the thing that you need to learn. And
mm-hmm.
it's a little bit harder to do the same things for yourself,
mm-hmm.
you know, and to sort of say like, I think it's a stage in the falling in the whole thing.
Yeah.
Like, how do you get to the point where you're like okay with falling in the hole enough so that you can really decide, you know, learn what the hole is. Yeah.
So you can avoid it.
Yeah, exactly. Because you're not going to avoid it unless you really explore it.
Right.
But if you fall in the hole and you can't get out, then, you know, no, it's not serving anybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I do think that's a practitioner issue right there.
I want to thank everybody who is a sponsor of Peter's podcast on Patreon. Patreon is a cool crowdfunding site that I use to make it possible to have Peter's podcast without advertisements. So many of the podcasts I love to listen to stop right in the middle and sell me a mattress or sell me a watch or sell me some food service. I'm just like constantly fast forwarding through that stuff. I hope that I can avoid doing that in Peter's podcast, but it requires some funding from folks like you who enjoy this content and are willing to, say, spend the price of a cappuccino on it or even less. So if that's you, sounds like it's worth doing, please check it out, patreon.com/peterspodcast, and you can subscribe for any amount you like. Some of my sponsors are getting a session with me every month where we talk for an hour online, or getting a mantra from me, or just dropping a buck here and there to make it possible. You can always start, stop, or change the amount. So it's super easy. Thank you. Patreon.com/Peter's Podcast. So I want to tease out a little bit more what this kind of Svadhyaya looks like. In
mm-hmm.
other words,
mm-hmm.
you know, you said I went in the room and I did a meditation practice. Well, I wasn't thinking about my emotional reaction to things while I was meditating. I was doing a Kriya practice and I sat in
mm-hmm.
silence. And I came back down and again, I was like at the etheric level of things, you know, implanting whatever I brought from my meditation into the chakras so that I have a clearer understanding of how this is manifesting in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But when I get upset about something, I'm either going to be stuck in it, that first option, mm-hmm. right? And just get mad. Mm-hmm. Or maybe avoid it, like go walk the dog, mm-hmm. right? But, and not think about it, right? Or maybe go walk the dog and think about it because that provided me some space from mm-hmm. the situation.
Yeah.
Right? Whether it was an email I got that would made me mad or a conversation that I had with you that made me mad or whatever, reading about something in the newspaper that made me mad mm-hmm. or sad or whatever, you know? And so during that time, I'm reminded of something I heard on a podcast with, of all things, Pod Save America, which is a political podcast. But one of the spokespeople, Tommy, was talking to a musician. And he was talking about one of the songs that this musician wrote. And it sounded, I don't know this musician, but he sounds like he's more in the country western vein. Mm-hmm. And you know, often the lyrics in those are pretty explicit. So the theme of the song, as it was being described, was about it's, you know, it's not okay to just be enraged all the time. You know, you can't, don't keep throwing this out. And it was, they were talking mm-hmm. about it a little in terms yeah. of like Twitter and what happens on Twitter.
Yeah.
But what this musician said, and I'll put his name in the show notes, was I think it's really important for us to take a moment and put ourselves in someone else's point of view mm-hmm. and look at things from that place. And that's been a super important part of my own self-study, mm-hmm. that if I can look at what are they experiencing, you know, what's motivating that, then suddenly my self-righteousness around it gets to meet what they might be feeling self-righteous about, or mm-hmm. or however you want to call that. It's like, then suddenly it's not I'm the victim of their thing anymore. It's that I can start to see, wait, they have just as much right to be in this. They're trying hard too, you know. They're doing the best they can given the tools and the practice and the whatever. And so am I. And where did I fall down? Where am I still trying to learn something that I didn't bring to the table?
Yeah. You know, I think it's especially with the fiery emotions, it's just very tricky to negotiate that. I mean, and I'm intrigued by the fact that you use putting yourself in the other person's, it almost sounds like you're using your felt sense to imagine yourself in the other person's experience. And like, I wouldn't overlook the fact that you're actually using your own experience to do that, which is a form of svadhyaya. You know what I mean? It's like you're kind of this gets to the heart of ahimsa. Because if
non-harming
or, you know, just being inviolate, like mm-hmm. not harming and not letting yourself be harmed,
yeah.
you know, like, but it's so hard to do because we, you know, emotionally we kind of lock into things. And if there's some resonance in our emotional being from yeah. what we're coming across out there in the yeah. world, then, you know, it's just so hard to separate that out, and taking that walk with the dog or putting yourself in some situation where you're like able to get a little space and then sort of go back in and think, what's this remind me of? What's this about in me? What might this be about in them? Then you have the ability to start to do your own process.
Right.
And I think that's really the key, because that's, you know, I mean, as yogis, we know that that's the case,
yeah.
and we're taught that, and it's an intellectual seed that's planted right from the beginning, but we have to really learn how to do it.
How to do it, exactly.
But if you even step back from that and look at the world, mostly what we're taught, I think, is this isn't working for me. I don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
You change it.
Yeah, yeah.
You change you so I can be okay.
Right. Or change my circumstances.
I'm going to change my circumstance. I'm going to change it out there. I'm going to go somewhere else. Or I'm going to make that person or those people or that whatever
right.
conform to my idea of what needs to happen. And,
right.
you know, it's a tricky place in yoga because sometimes really proactive people think, well, yeah, of course that's what it's about,
mm-hmm.
right? But in yoga, we see that inner work. Like we look more at the relationship between the inner and outer from the perspective of inner to outer than at this perspective outer to inner. Like if I'm coming across somebody who's very aggressive, it's on me to deal with my response and reaction. Let's say it this way, my emotional reaction
right.
to that aggression.
Right.
So that I can have a response that it's in some way relates to that aggression in a way that works for me,
mm-hmm.
right? So that if I'm tending to resonate with that particular form of aggression, like, you know, from a patterned old place, then I can say, okay, that feels like that thing. It's not this thing that's in front of me right now. That's just somebody that's over there trying to do their thing.
Yeah.
And I might have, like, what's my responsibility perception-wise?
Yeah.
And how can I notice what that reminds me of, take space to walk the dog, imagine myself in that person's shoes, and then not to say like everything's fine, it might not be,
mm-hmm.
but to say how do I want to relate to that?
Right, right.
Like, do I want to address that person? Do I know this person? Is it safe?
It's right? so funny because it comes all the way back to the component of manas, that's what's this got to do with me?
Right.
But instead of only deriving information from the senses and the memories, it's also now allowing the buddhi to have some reflection of
exactly.
a higher perspective
Which
and let that influence it.
Right.
Right.
Which is, because if we don't do the meditation on a regular basis when we're not in the process of
yes.
The ebb and flow, the thick
yeah,
of it,
yeah.
then we can't call on it when
yes,
we are.
Yes, exactly. And that is a really key point and something I brought up on our retreat,
yeah.
that when you get skilled about going into this other state of mind,
mm-hmm.
then you can call on that. We were yeah. jokingly calling it instant samyama.
Yeah.
But this like taking the mind and putting it in this condition of being both in focused on what's going on in the world and also holding the point of meditation on it so that you can
mm-hmm.
download
yeah.
some valuable perspective.
Yeah. You know, and I think the really salient point here for beginner practitioners as well as, you know, old hands at yoga is to remember that it doesn't start and end at a particular time or place.
Yeah.
Like you start this work and then you just do this work and
yeah.
it's your way of living.
It's
way, not
yeah.
like a thing that you attain.
Yeah.
And that could be, you know, I see that there are stages of that, of knowing that,
mm-hmm.
you know, like people come into a training, they've been doing yoga for a while. They see the efficacy, things are feeling good and changing and I don't know, their relationships are going a little better, or they're losing a little weight, or they're like, you know, happy where they were depressed, or
changing
they're,
their
you
jobs.
Know, just they're changing their jobs,
mm-hmm.
and they're like, woohoo, you know,
mm-hmm.
and then, you know, they think, like, where's this place where I could say I attained it,
mm-hmm.
you know, after 3 months,
mm-hmm.
and I just have to kind of like twiddle my thumbs and be like, yes, awesome, good,
mm-hmm.
go, and
mm-hmm.
then like wait. So that I could like be supportive when they go, shit, this isn't working. You
mm-hmm.
know what I mean? Like, because, it, you know, after so many years, you know, you realize that, I don't know, I realize, I guess I'll just take this for myself. You know, as soon as, it's the kiss of death. Every time I get to a place where I'm like, I'm at a plateau and I'm like, woo, I've done it. I'm
mm-hmm.
there, man. Then like, whatever, life just has this way of throwing me into the next big thing.
Yeah.
And I think it's useful to have the thought that, you know, there's not a there to attain.
Mm-hmm.
There's just more understanding, deeper layers of understanding and decoding who you are.
Yeah. And what is, and Yeah, I mean, I don't know, and this is maybe in the realm of science fiction, but to me, in the decades of practicing and studying and pondering and being creative around it, like, making stories up and songs and things like that, I've pondered a fair amount, like, what in the world is going on in this world, and through study where, people have seriously been trying to philosophize around that, it really seems like we are so prejudiced toward the events of life, the actions of life, the gains of life, that those seem like what we're about. And in my own coming to terms with it all, I think that all of those things are almost interchangeable. Like you can do this or you can do that. I wrote a book, Incarnation, that's just about that, right? So, but you can do this or you can do that, and all of the things are important, your choices are important, and all of that stuff. But what's really going on is how are you relating to all those things? And that's what you're learning, how to relate to life and have it be this thing where it's, to use Al's term, you're graceful within that, right? It's like, things come, you face the challenge and know that this challenge is what it's about, and how I can have emotions, how I'm going to relate to them, what am I learning, how is it evolving? It's a little like, I use this image a lot of a video game. It's like you get better and better and you grow in the levels, and each level has new challenges that are probably harder, but you're more adept. And the goal is not, it's as ethereal as the video game. It's like, so what? You got so many points, they're meaningless, right?
Hearing you speak along those terms just kind of makes me want to go meditate. it's a very individual thing. I can be so balanced with some things, and I have a lot of that poet soul in me, Like I'm not the most ambitious person. I don't really care about, I don't know. I'm not a my fire goes in different pl to a different place. I forgot what I was going to say. Can you go back where you are?
Yeah, I was just talking about the goal of life isn't the achievements and whatnot, but the learning to deal with what comes. And ultimately, I think that it's sort of like where you came to, where you lost your thread of thought. It's sort of like that. It's like, wait, what are we doing here? It's that life is the what are we doing here? The having a dog is such a valuable tool for so many people. They feel so in the present with the dog. That someone the other night said, "My dog is my guru." It's like they're just living, and every day that they get to chase a ball or play with a stick, that's like magical, and it's 100% with them all the
Yes,
time.
absolutely. And don't we aspire to that,
Right.
right?
And so to me, that's like, can we enjoy the living? Even, and enjoy is a weird word, it's a little loaded, because sometimes things are suffering. They're hard, right? But can you do it? Like work. Like work is hard, but we do it. And it's rewarding.
And that is the fine line, right? Because, if you talk about, say, the emotions that are considered dangerous or bad, we have sadness, which is depression, right? Can be depression. But, some of my finest moments have been with tears. Like, as somebody who sort of is more fiery than emotive, and who, you know, with my background, when I can, I mean, I literally cry when something feels true, mm-hmm. or when there's a sense of spaciousness or awe in any mm-hmm. way, I go to the emotional place, and it can be sad, mm-hmm. right? I mean, I actually appreciate the emotion of sadness because I was not allowed to have it. Mm-hmm. And so when I do have it, I know that I'm in truth. I know that something is true. Yeah. That's always been the case for me. Whereas anger is not so pleasant for me. You know, it's dangerous in a different way. And I have had a different journey with trying to deal with it in myself and with other people. Mm-hmm. But beyond all that, like on the other side of that, you know, I don't see, you know, the eradication of emotion is not where we're going.
That's
or what should
goal.
Be the goal.
Yeah. Yeah.
It should be the you know, what I would call right expression, mm-hmm. which doesn't mean to me proper. Mm-hmm. It means right angle, mm-hmm. right? Like if you're able to do that, tapping into what's beyond the emotional body, the mental body, right? Going to that place of inspiration, you know, then you get to make those cognitive shifts where you can change your perspective. Mm-hmm. And now those emotions are more available in a way that works.
Yeah.
Right? Where you could be angry about something that makes you angry and just express it. Al's done that with me a lot, actually, mm-hmm. over the course of writing of this book. Mm-hmm. Right? You know, he'll just say, I'm not really so happy about this thing that's going on. And he'll say, like, I just have to express it. And when he does, it always feels very right. Mm-hmm. And it has a purpose and it sets a boundary and it's cool.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not like directed at you. Right.
Yeah.
And that's a big, you know, I think that's, you know, all of the emotions have a purpose.
Right.
In kind of bringing you into like into expression and then back into alignment.
Right. Well, I think it was in, I don't remember if it was in classical theater. You know, they have the masks for the mm-hmm. different kinds of emotions, right? And aren't they all included in the play?
Yeah, they should. Yeah, I think
like
so.
In the Commedia dell'arte or something like that.
Well, it's like Ayurveda, you need all the tastes.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So it's like that is the range of experiencing. And to go back to my like science fiction notion, it's like I believe that life is for experiencing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so that includes the whole range of experiences.
Yeah.
You don't get to just have the ones that feel good without the ones that feel bad. There's no such thing because they don't feel good unless you have the contrast. And so when we come into life and we think that we're only supposed to be happy, we're just setting ourselves up for delusion.
I think so. I really do. I don't think that it's, you know, you end up, in my opinion, with a lot of people who are stuck in what I refer to as spiritual bypass. Mm-hmm. It's fine. It's mm-hmm. great. Mm-hmm. Everything's good, right? Mm-hmm. And you just get stuck in that mode. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of times when I see that, I sort of go, oh, well, you know, that's where that person needs to be right now. And I'm
right.
not going to knock them down out of that place.
Right.
You know, because it just doesn't feel safe to me.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, I don't think that, you know, it's a particularly expressive or healthy way to live a life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I think of the places where I need to express as being the places that were shut down for good reason at some point because
mm-hmm.
it wasn't safe. And so like, I always wanted
to nurture them.
How
back
do you
to
nurture
health.
It back to health?
Cause yeah.
I think health is where you could, where there's movement,
right,
where prana
right.
is flowing.
Right.
So it's true in the emotional body as well.
Mm-hmm.
And the mind, you know, like the mind and the emotions are such a dance, you know?
Mm-hmm. And then that plays out in the physical realm as well. And that's where these two women who I admire who do this Create podcast are mm-hmm. so smart about, okay, so how do you work with these patterns that you've got built in your emotions to actually pursue the thing that your own DNA, you know, your own karma is pushing you toward, whether it's creating something or performing something or whatever it is that you're doing, you're living, you know?
Well, I think of that as, we're here to express, and that doesn't necessarily mean we're here to like do drama and emote, right? But we're here to do something. Mm-hmm. We're here to have some kind of relationships and express through this medium of life.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of times that does get shut down.
Right.
With all of, like, I feel like sometimes we just get stuck in a, like we get plopped into a situation and then we have to kind of extricate ourselves like piece by piece and say, oh, that was that, you know, belief, or that was that thought that I've been having. That was that adaptive reaction, and like I don't need that anymore. I'm gonna see what else there is. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm gonna change my perspective.
I'm gonna change my way. And people use like tricks of pattern to do that. You know, like I'm gonna do this for the next 30 days, or I'm gonna keep a journal, or I'm gonna do something.
Those things are fabulous as long as we don't get stuck on them.
Yeah, as that's the thing.
As that's the thing, right? They're so useful. I mean.
Or I'm going to take a class, or I'm going to buy a membership at a yoga studio, or
go to a different sangha, or yeah, exactly. It's just, it's, you know, we have to keep, you know, that's, I consider that part of sadhana.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a balance to be struck there too, because if we're always looking for the next thing, because we're not, you know, content,
right,
then we overwhelm ourselves. Right. Like, I think that there's a primary way. But then there's like renewal,
right?
Like you have to renew the contract. We're in that time right now, the Jewish New Year, where it's like, you know, it's like you got to review, you got to make things right, and you got to, you know, set your contract for the next year. Mm-hmm. You know, people do it with like mood boards. You know, I'm going to set my intention. What's this year going to look like? Mm-hmm. You know, let me review last year. If you're really doing sadhana, I think you're looking at what did I do yesterday?
Yeah.
And what am I doing today?
Yeah.
Right?
You're in every moment doing
and
that.
You kind of have these layers, or, you know, like spheres of influence, like that you have an overall contract, and then like a year, you know, like you have to be able to see out a certain length of time and with a certain vision.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I think I've been exploring that a lot. This, like, the dog sensibility versus the 5-year plan. You know?
Yeah.
Like, is it as, like, it's in the Tao, you know? Just flow.
Yeah.
Just flow. And that's a fascinating notion to me.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
You know, there's a my teacher, Heather Principe, my polarity teacher, she has this, she learned this from her Cree teacher. He was a Cree medicine person. And she always teaches that you have to look at the path. Like you have to literally look at what's right in front of you. And then you have to look up at the horizon. And you have to look at the path, and you have to look up at the horizon. And if you're not doing both, alternating, so you could see both perspectives, you're kind of getting a little bit lost.
Yeah,
right.
Going in circles, maybe.
You can, you know, it has lots of different dysfunctions that can arise. Like if you're only looking at the horizon, then you maybe get like stuck in what it should be, right? And if you're only looking at the micro path that's right in front of you, then you're like just kind of walking around. You can walk around in circles.
Yeah, or fall off a cliff.
Right, fall off a cliff. And, you know, I think we all like land in one tendency or another. Yeah. And that has been something that's very slow for me to integrate, actually. Mm-hmm. Like, I know where I land on that. But it becomes a little easier if you just... Because ultimately, those two things have to relate. Like, if you're going with the flow, of what's coming up today, and you have a bigger picture of what, you know, where you think you're going in the general picture, then you're going to be making choices in a sort of more easeful way about what's happening today and tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you could arguably say that you start to create that future
mm-hmm.
by those choices that you're making, because you put a filter on it.
Yeah.
You know, you put an intention on it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually very exciting to me, you know, that you can do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, maybe in a subsequent podcast, we'll talk about that, looking at the horizon part.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Wendy.
Thank you, Peter.
I think this was fruitful. I hope it's useful.
Yeah, I hope it's useful.
Yeah. All right. Well, have a lovely day.
You too.
Thanks. Namaste.
Namaste.
That's it for this week's Peter's Podcast. I hope you've enjoyed it. Please check me out on patreon.com. Support the podcast at any level that makes sense to you. And we'll see you next time. Namaste.